But first, I want to remind everyone in the audience that Seattle Hemp Fest is entirely volunteer-run, and your average donation from folks is about a buck. So if you just throw in five, that you've donated five times more than your average person. And Seattle Hemp Fest is down a stage this year, so it needs all the support you can get. So my name is Dr. Dominic Korva. I am the Executive Director and Social Science Research Director of the Center for the Study of Cannabis and Social Policy. And with us today, we're going to go, we're not in order here. I think I remember the order that everybody wanted to go in. But it's my pleasure to have two new friends today on the panel. I've just met Ellen and Aaron backstage, and I'm pretty excited to hear them talk. But obviously, Patrick and Michael have been around for a while in the Seattle area and may be familiar to some of you in the audience. So the format today is we're going to get 5 minutes from each person, and then we're going to open up for questions and conversation. So the one thing I want to say about the veterans panel here today is that this is a subject that's not new to cannabis. That in many ways, it was the veterans as much as it was the hippies that brought cannabis consumption to the United States after the Vietnam War. Dennis Perone's famous description of cannabis as an anti-war drug comes from the perspective of a Vietnam veteran who came back and became a hippie, actually. A lot of veterans did that. A lot of veterans did not become hippies, but nonetheless, whether they knew it or not, they were self-medicating for PTSD. And there were a lot of them, and they probably reached more different corners of American culture than I'd say even the hippies did at the time, because they came from middle America. They came from conservative households. So this issue is not new, and it's very exciting to me to be able to introduce you to this panel so you can see what the politics actually of cannabis and war, or being a war veteran, are today. But remember, this is part of a long trajectory. It's a key, critical part of cannabis history and culture. So with that said, I'm going to turn it over to our first panelist, which is Michael Krawitz. He's been a friend of mine for several years, and he works at the global level in particular, advocating for veteran access to cannabis. So I'm going to start you off, Michael Krawitz. 5 minutes.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. I just run with the note on the note that you just started with. I'm really proud of the article that I wrote for High Times magazine. The High Times, I think it was May issue, was dedicated to veterans, and we had like six different veterans articles in there. And I got to write the quote-unquote anchor article, and I was really happy and proud of that. And I tied it together. I kind of wove it through, you know, what I consider to be the veterans' kind of place. And most people don't realize, you know, the veterans are there in many cases. Like Jack Herer, so well known to this crowd and this, you know, this venue for so many years, still icon even after his passing. Jack Herer, military veteran, and Dennis Perone, you know, kind of a pioneer, groundbreaker for medical marijuana in so many ways, and lesser known as a military veteran. So yeah, the veterans are there. I really appreciate you commenting on that. And I think it's worth noting too, I think this is actually the first panel that we've had at HempFest that's all veterans. That's actually a veterans panel, not just dedicated. We've had a couple now dedicated to veterans issues. Yeah. So thank you HempFest, and thank you, Dominic. Thank you, everybody. So I think what I'll do is just give you kind of a quick overview of where we're at. I come to kind of give you from the field, you know, advisories. These annual little visits to HempFest are really special to me. And I do get out to the international level. I do get it to the national level. And both of those are very, very different vibe than when I can come home to HempFest and be with my friends and family and smoke a legal joint. It's like really, really beautiful. Thank you for that. So where we're at right now, we've got kind of a lot of different irons in the fire. And what veterans have basically come into is the medical marijuana side, I guess you'd say. We've gotten into a little bit with legalization. We've had a veterans committee and a veterans kind of component to each of the, including Washington State and Oregon, Colorado. We've had veterans working and try to, you know, legalize as well, but that's just more of a small veterans committee. As a veterans population, we're working on medical access to cannabis. We got a VA medical marijuana policy passed in 2010, and that was updated 2011. It's really just a simple policy that just says that if you're using medical marijuana under a state medical marijuana program, you're not to be harassed, you know, in some way that it might seem like you would be for using an illegal, you know, marijuana while you're on the VA property. So they also made it clear that the DEA had actually threatened them, and they were not allowed to recommend or otherwise fill out the forms for the veteran to participate in the state medical marijuana programs. And that's what we've been working on ever since 2011, essentially trying to give the doctors the right to fill out the forms or recommend cannabis. And if you understand how medical marijuana works and how this whole thing unfolded, that's a free speech issue. It's your free speech interaction with the doctor that produces the quote-unquote recommendation, which is not a quote-unquote prescription, would be quote-unquote illegal. And you can take the quotes off because, you know, you're dealing with the DEA here. It's really illegal. So anyway, we have gotten pretty far down that road. We've got a Veterans Equal Access Act in Congress. We've got a CARES Act, also has a line in it that would actually do this and make it very, very clear that the doctors have this free speech that would be able to do this. And for us, I think it's really important to make this clear that this is kind of an educational program. This is about making sure that the doctors inside the VA, which are treating millions upon millions of veterans, understand that cannabis is there, understand that cannabis is possibly an effective treatment, and to step by step incrementally get them to the point where eventually they'll be able to prescribe it out of the pharmacy, which is where we want to be and where we're heading, you know, eventually. So right now we're, you know, trying to get this new VA medical marijuana policy out. It expired, but they actually have made it very clear that just because it expired, it didn't go away. It still stays in force until it's actually replaced or rescinded. So it's still sticking around. And we're really kind of waiting for this update. They think that they can make it clear that doctors have free speech, but yet can't fill out those forms. So, you know, that's kind of a magic trick to us. We want to see how they do that. So we really are trying to focus on that. We're also focusing on them correcting their website. If you go to the VA right now and you look at post-traumatic stress, Patrick will talk a little bit about, we got added as a condition in Washington State. We've also got it added in almost every other state. There's only a couple states now out of all 29. There's only like two states left. If New York finally signs this year, there'll be only two states left that don't have post-traumatic stress out of the 29 modern Prop 215 laws. So really proud of that. It's been an incredible progress. And you know, right now we're looking at a website that really is—it's almost like from the Stone Age at the VA. So we're not just going to demand that they, you know, replace it. We're going to give them the information to replace it with, and we're going to give that to them. We've got a forum coming up on the 13th in D.C. Anybody's invited, you know, that's in the area. If you know anybody that representatives in Congress, anybody you want to talk to try to get them to D.C. on 13th of September, we're having a veterans forum with the VA. We're bringing in veterans from around the country to talk back and forth. And you know, we'll be talking about the VA website. We'll be talking about some of these things and the progress that the VA, you know, hasn't been able to participate in. They've made it clear that the veterans are allowed to use medical marijuana, but this is the first real connection we've had talking about the progress is how it's actually worked for vets, and it's been incredibly successful. You guys have seen the success with access to cannabis. So before I take off the mic, I just want to say hi to Dr. Sisley, who's in Reno right now at the American Legion conference. We've got the American Legion. It's like the biggest veteran service organization in the country now, stumping for us up on Capitol Hill, trying to get some of this reform going. Like I said, the veterans are on one voice on this in reforming medical access to cannabis. We're really coming together, millions and millions of us at this point. It's really, really powerful. So hi to Dr. Sisley out there in Reno, the guys from Vets out there. And I think that's everything I wanted to say. Really love you guys, and thanks for having me.
Next up, we have Ellen Brown, who I just got a little bit of her biography backstage, a very interesting one. After coming out of the military, she went to Humboldt and worked in pretty much every part of the cannabis industry you can in that area of the country, which is, of course, pretty much the main area of the country for cannabis. And then she moved back to the Northeast. Are you in New Hampshire or are you in?
Massachusetts.
In Massachusetts. So her activism back there is actually regional, though, as well. I'll let her tell you all about it, though. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you very much. My name is Ellen Taylor Brown, and I am with the New England Veterans Alliance, and I am also the founder of Sensimia Seminars. And once I got out of the service and after I came home from California in 2012, Massachusetts was in the process of getting our first medical marijuana program. And I was home, and I'm happy to say that I voted yes on question 3, which was our medical marijuana program. And in this program, we are allowed to cultivate for ourselves, which is really important. So a lot of what I do is education on teaching like a man how to fish. I want everyone to know about their endocannabinoid systems. I want everyone to understand the difference between an indica and sativa and why you would grow what, when, and what would be the best for you. So I'm looking to teach everyone about how to pick strain specific and how to take care of themselves, how to take care of their family, and then not only how to take care of yourself, but how to really understand it to the point where you can go ahead and educate the next person. So that's why I started Sensimia Seminar, so that way I could go and educate the next person. And I've had a lot of great proof of concept with my students, because it's really a beautiful thing to watch teaching somebody how to make edibles or how to grow cannabis, and then getting a text or getting a message months, years later saying, hey, remember that candies class? I was able to give that to somebody that was terminally ill and it really helped them in their final days. Or, hey, I was able to grow and I took all my excess medicine and I gave it to somebody who needed it. And I'm like, yes, that's my student. So that's what brings me a lot of pride and a lot of joy. And working with the New England Veterans Alliance, what we've done is we've really focused on the region of New England and how do we make a difference there? What are the needs? What are we seeing? What are veterans asking for? And they're asking for education. So we do a lot of classes for free for veterans, and we also hold monthly support meetings in different states, so that way we can go to the veterans, they can come to us. But also what we do, which is really important and that everyone should be involved in, is activism and being active in your state and local legislation. You want to make sure that laws are passed and they're going to be favorable, especially towards veterans. New Hampshire was one of the last states to allow for post-traumatic stress disorder to be added as their list of qualifying conditions for their medical marijuana program. And the New England Veterans Alliance was there, and we testified on behalf of how positive it would be to have PTSD added for those veterans that weren't able to get any medicine or didn't know that there was an alternative to opiates and that they could use cannabis. And I'm proud to say that as of March this year, New Hampshire added PTSD as a qualifying condition. And that's the work of so many people. That's the work of the veterans speaking up. That's the work of their family members speaking up. That's the work of just people having the conversation. And with this 22 here in Seattle, what I've seen is your veteran organization is being very loud, very proud, and very active. And over on the East Coast, you know, we're liking, we're sharing, and we're talking about it. And they're doing the same. So we have a really great veteran community. And I think what I always like to drive home is just the importance of each person teaching every single person that they come in contact with. Don't be shy. Don't be afraid. You never know. If you tell somebody that you use medical marijuana or you've seen it be beneficial or you're even a recreational user, the whole conversation could change. Oh, I haven't done that since the 70s. Or I have somebody I know in my family who has cancer, and they've been wondering about cannabis. What do you know? What are some resources? You are that resource. You're the best resource for every single person you know. And if you're for cannabis the way I'm for cannabis, which I know you are because you're here, you want to make sure that you're able to give them the resources to the veteran organizations, to the organizations that are going to be able to get you to Dr. Sue Sicily. I've heard all about her. She's fantastic. So finding out what your regional organizations are, finding out what your national organizations are, and just not backing down, knowing that you're on the right side of what it is we're doing, and we need to break the stigma. And the only way to break the stigma is to break the silence and say, I am a cannabis user. I am a medical marijuana user. And that'll help change it.
Thank you, Ellen. The theme seems to be continuing the process of popular education. You have to continue to educate each other. You got to educate everyone else as well. Our next speaker, Patrick Seifert, is a good friend of mine based out of Olympia. Those of you who are in Washington State might be familiar with him and his 22 Too Many organizing. Patrick, I'm just delighted to be able to introduce you to the crowd.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So I got a lot of people, it won't take me very long, but I've got to say thank you to Seattle Hempfest for putting this together, this all-veteran panel. Amazing. Please give it up for Seattle Hempfest for doing that. And there's a lot of, we have over 100 years of veteran activism that has come together for this weekend. And we have Jose that has come in from out of town. We have support from Sunshine Cannabis, Sugar Leaf, Namaste, Vapes for Vets, Weed Rather, Randy, I can't thank you enough, brother. Thank you for all that you do for 22 Too Many. Jesse coming into town, Kat Jeter and Carrie, just to name a few. And Mike, my mentor, it's an honor to be able to sit here next to him. What I want to bring to talk to you guys today about is something that we're working on bringing to not only Washington State, but the entire United States. The problem we are facing right now is the 20 to 22 veteran suicides a day. We know in Washington State, in every state that has a medical cannabis program, that those suicide rates are lower. So we believe that if you deny a veteran in Texas or in Alabama or whatever these states are that don't have any medical programs at all, deny them access to this plant with those numbers going on, that is unethical. And we are going to bring that fight to them under ethics. We believe that we can win that fight. We want to put a billboard in Texas that says, if you lost a penny of your benefits because of cannabis use, call this 1-800 number. And we're going to bring the fight to them. Listen, we have got to get access to this plant to every veteran in the United States. It's a travesty that there's still not access for every veteran. 22 Too Many is proudly responsible for getting PTSD added to the list of qualifying conditions here in Washington State. 2 years ago, we went up to the Capitol. We presented Senator Hobbs with a bill, a PTSD bill. We begged him to run that bill to the end without adding anything to it because that's what killed the bill in years prior. And he made that promise. And the one thing that they did add in the end was TBI, which was a blessing, right? And so PTSD and TBI are now on the list of qualifying conditions. And thanks to Dr. Vivian Blanco, I was the very first patient in Washington State to receive an authorization for PTSD. So what is 22 Too Many plan on doing? Two things we have coming up next session. We want to add phantom limb to the list of qualifying conditions. Listen, the list of qualifying conditions in Washington State is sad. There are states that have like twice as many qualifying conditions, on their list of qualifying conditions, and we don't have very many, and that list should be as long as we want that list to be. Definitely we want to add phantom limb to that list of qualifying conditions. And also in Illinois, if you're not familiar with Illinois, there's an Illinois Veterans Clause that they have going on there. A veteran can take his medical records from the VA, go to the health department, put it on the table. If it's on the list of qualifying conditions, they get their authorization for free. And so that's something else that we're going to try and bring to this state as well. A veteran should not have to pay for his authorization, and he definitely shouldn't have to pay for his cannabis. Listen, a perfect example is Randy. He's in our organization right here. Listen, he is 100% unemployable. He can't work or he'll lose his money, right? He takes last year he spent over $10,000 on cannabis because he chooses cannabis over pharmaceuticals. Mm. Yeah. He's a single father. He has to spend $10,000 of that money on cannabis. That should be paid for him. He shouldn't have to take the money he's meant to live on, right, and use it for his medicine. He chooses cannabis. He will not take anything from the VA. He chooses cannabis, and that should be paid for. In closing, please come by the veteran VIP tent this year. Also, for the first time in Seattle HempFest history, we have a VIP/safe zone for veterans. It gets pretty packed here, absolutely. It gets pretty packed here, and if a vet gets triggered or anything, we have a safe zone for them now. There'll be fans, refreshments, all sorts of stuff going on down there. You have to come down and see. You have to be a veteran to come into that tent. It's at the far north end. You can't go any further, right by the big white silos. You can't. If you go past those, you went too far. And thank you very much for your time. Everybody that supports, if you ever come across a veteran in need, help them, please. if you know a veteran, go home tonight and call them and let them know that they're loved, special, and important. You never know. We're losing 20 to 22 a day, you guys. That could be the moment that you save that veteran's life. Love and light.
Thank you, Patrick. Give it up for Patrick Seaford. And finally, another new friend, Aaron Augustus. Had a chance to talk to backstage not too long ago. Incredibly compelling personal story. He was in the first wave, basically, in Iraq. So I'll let him tell it. But he's a combat veteran. He was there at a particularly historical moment in history and place. And we are honored to have you with us today, Aaron.
Thank you. My name is Aaron Augustus, and I'm from California. I started the Veterans Cannabis Group last year down there, particularly because of my experience in Iraq and my use of cannabis medicinally for PTSD. I was in the Army for 5.5 years. I joined in June of 1998. When 9/11 happened, I knew we were going to go to war, which we did about a year and a half later. And I crossed the border of Iraq on Easter Day 2003. So I was just a couple of weeks behind the initial invasion. And I ended up staying in Mosul, Iraq, which is North Iraq, for 7 months in 2003. And at that point in time, I was already a sergeant in the military. I served 5.5 years of active duty. That was the tail end of my enlistment. And when I got back out of the military, I definitely underestimated the transition into civilian life, because at that point in time in my life, you're only, you know, my entire adult life was in the military. From 18 to 23 years old, you know, all of my adult life was in the military, and then followed off by a deployment to a combat zone. And then literally 45 days after being in Iraq, coming home, and then going back to California and being a civilian, trying to readjust. So I ended up doing community college. I signed up for community college about 3 weeks after being back and said, oh, no problem, I'm gonna go to school full time. You know, I just went to Iraq, and that didn't work out very well for me right away because I had not decompressed yet. And at that point in time, I ended up dropping all of my classes, and I just used cannabis. And I didn't do anything for the entire rest of the year until I finally started school that fall, where I went on and got my degree in corporate finance and moved on. But that was a period of transition, which I think that a lot of veterans are missing, is the transition period, coming back from the military, especially if you were in a combat zone, and then trying to figure out what your next step in life is. What the military doesn't tell you, and what is not really talked about, is your brain development as a human being, especially for males. You're not fully developed in your brain until you're 25 years old. So if you're 18 or 23, like I was, and you're in a combat zone, this is a heightened level of experience for a long period of time. It's not like a car accident where it's a very quick, you know, moment in time. That can be very traumatic. This is where you're actually living in an environment. Imagine this is a compound, and the people on the other side of the train tracks are your enemy, and you're always living in that heightened state of awareness. So your brain is developing, your neurons are developing different pathways because you're not even fully developed as a human being. So when you come back, you are you're different, you know, physically, and that's something that is not really understood. I didn't understand it until I started to talk to the VA, and 10 years after I'd got out of the military, which, you know, again, leads back to, I started the Veterans Cannabis Group to try to reach out to other veterans to see if I was, you know, hey guys, am I the only one smoking this much cannabis? And like, is there anybody else out there that, you know, kind of has had these, you know, behaviors since being back from Iraq? And you know, I know that I'm still intelligent and smart in person and I can get good grades, but sometimes I go a little, you know, can become emotional or be triggered by different things. And what you have to understand is that you're having a normal experience to an abnormal situation. And so starting the Veterans Cannabis Group, connecting with the other veteran, you know, advocacy groups out there across the nation is something that I think is very important, like you were saying, Ellen, is, you know, coming together. One thing that we've been able to do with the Veterans Canvas Group is to start these conference call updates so we can all kind of dial in and speak wherever you are in the world. You can call in, and it's for us as veterans to be able to communicate across the nation. So I encourage you guys to check out our conference calls to stay up to date. They're recorded and posted on the website on veteranscanvasgroup.com. But I have a lot more to talk about. I'll be here all weekend. And so thank you very much for having me here. I appreciate your time. And
thank you, Aaron. Give it up, Aaron.
Yeah, like every branch of service.
All right. So we actually probably have about 8 minutes for questions from the audience. And I will start with Dr. Jim McCray.
This is probably mainly for Michael, but anybody that wants to talk to it. The VA, I worked at a VA 25 years ago in Philadelphia, and it was part of a substance abuse treatment and research effort. You know, there was a lot of opiate use, you know, people coming back, and they were really on top of that. It was, I thought, a pretty good bunch of work being done. In the intervening 25 years, they haven't adopted cannabis at all in that, have they? And if not, I mean, given their history of being so on top of the opiate stuff, particularly in alcoholism, isn't there an in there, the pre-existing research things, University of, or in Philadelphia, for example, at the VA, they have a good drug unit. Any leeway with that? Any entry?
I think the thing that jumped out at me from what the new director of the VA, who's now a doctor and not a veteran, I think it's the first time we've had a non-veteran director of the VA, secretary of the VA. He was, I think he actually keyed on suicide. I think he actually is looking more at cannabis to prevent suicide. I don't even know if he's discovered cannabis's opiate overdose reduction capability yet, which is, you know, really out there. I mean, it's journal articles and everything about it. They just, you know, really haven't picked it up yet. And as far as you know, what their program kind of does and doesn't do, I personally, you know, started this many, many years ago, recognizing that if you got drug tested out of your clinic because of use of marijuana, then you wouldn't be able to use cannabis as an adjunct. You wouldn't be able to get the opiate overdose reduction. You wouldn't be able to get any of that. It's like, do not pass go, do not, you know. So that was what for my work. And I'm happy to say that the VA, not just under my pressure, but a lot of pressure, has actually come up with fairly decent guidelines that makes it so that you shouldn't really be, if the doctor's following the guidelines and following the procedures and everything laid out, you really shouldn't be arbitrarily kicked out of treatment because of a quote-unquote failed drug test. And, you know, that may not sound like much, but that's like kind of where they're at right now inside the system. And as far as, you know, I get the feeling, like, two things. One, they really can't participate. Like, a lot of us, you know, are like, oh, the VA's got all this funding for research and stuff. Why can't they do some of this research? Well, they just really can't. They can't get involved in a lot of this kind of political stuff that's going on. But that doesn't mean they're not really closely paying attention to the results that we come up with. And, you know, the results of opiate overdose reduction and stuff like that, I'm sure of it. I'm sure of it that they are actually paying attention. But as far as, I guess the VA is probably, you guys can answer it maybe better, but they'll probably, you know, be able to really handle this when any other part of the federal government is able to handle it, you know?
Do any other panelists want to address that question? Go ahead, Ellen.
Kind of just touching on the end of what he said, the important thing to remember is the VA can't touch it. They're federally funded. They're federally run. So what we really need to do is put all our efforts toward getting cannabis to stop being a Schedule I substance. It's ridiculous that cannabis is a Schedule I substance, and it's listed as having no medicinal value and not being safe to use even under the supervision of a physician. So with that in mind, we have a lot of stigma to change on a federal level, and with that will come the veterans. And I think the veteran voice is what's going to make the federal government wake up.
Yeah, this is a really key thing. I mean, obviously, medical cannabis for veterans is important in and of itself, but also medical cannabis for veterans lifts the whole effort, not just for veterans. So it's an interesting intersection that there's a specialization, but it's part of a bigger movement.
Well, I'd like to add one more thing.
Yeah.
I think if you make it clear, we're talking about men and women who served their country under orders from the government. and then they come back with service-connected disabilities in the form of, one of them, combat-related PTSD. Okay, so that's very clear. We're talking about a very specific group of people. These people have served the country. The country put their trust into the men and women to defend the United States of America, and they came back and did so in an honorable way. So I think the federal government, the VA, needs to listen to the veterans, you know, and the government who sent us over there in the first place. They should listen to the people that they entrusted to do that mission, and that is the veterans. And that's why I think that another, you know, reason why our voice needs to be heard through the federal level, just like we've just talked about right here. Because the VA is, in Michael's words, you know, we have an inherited relationship, a lifelong inherited relationship with the VA because of our service to the government.
Mike and I took a meeting with the American Legion last time we were in D.C., and it was interesting that they're pushing to go to Schedule 3 because their thought process is Marinol's on a 3, so that's where cannabis should be. We don't want it to be a 3. We want it to be taken off the schedule altogether.
Thank you, Patrick. Thank you. Grandma Kat Jeter.
Thank you. One of the questions that I have regarding cannabis use for PTSD relative to veterans is we always talk about the trauma associated with combat, and certainly we all accept that. But there are a number of ways in which folks are traumatized. Military service is inherently dangerous, groundbreaking work. I'll use my own example, being first woman in combat units in 1977. I think we need to learn to expand our understanding of PTSD within the military context and broaden it so that we can better serve. In particular, I think about our women who disproportionately share sexual trauma associated with military service. And can you speak to plans to broaden that understanding?
Thank you so much for your service. That's amazing. So as a female veteran, what we're seeing is more female veterans coming forward and talking about those kinds of problems or sexual trauma as well. And I have seen the VA really listening and heeding what the female veterans are saying. I know that when I go to the VA in Cape Cod, they are asking me, do you have any trauma? We do have resources here for you. So they are trying to be proactive. And that's where I live in Massachusetts. So if you know a VA that isn't being proactive, it's really important to speak up and make sure that they know that these programs are available. But I am seeing more happening. And there is more of an attention that now that we've been in over a 10-year war, there are more female veterans coming and then coming out of service and then having PTSD or having other related issues. So I am seeing a pop-up of more female clinics or female-oriented this or like a safe space just for women. You know, veterans make up about 7% of the population, and then, you know, women are such a small portion of that. So it's like we all, like, I don't know you, but I love you, and I love everything you've done. So it's like, how can I help her? How can we work together? So just being a resource for each other, I think, is the biggest thing, because I'm here for you, and you're here for me.
Go ahead, Michael.
I want to just maybe give you a peek behind the scenes. I think it's important to know kind of movement strategy kind of perspective. Maybe this one will cut out as much. When we first started looking at, adding post-traumatic stress to the state laws as a qualifying condition, as a national effort, as a veterans effort, we were looking at the success from California, of course, but that was kind of unannotated. In other words, it's not specifically listed as a condition. There's no qualifying condition list in California. But New Mexico, when it came online, did have, the first post-traumatic stress qualification listed specifically. And we got that specific data and that result together with Sesamet trial, which is this, Marinol-like copy of THC that was successful on post-traumatic stress in a double-blind trial up in Canada, and all this data on a cannabinoid receptor system from Israel, and all that together, we decided to go to the states. And the first state that we went to was Oregon. Oregon had Ed Glick and Lee Berger. They've been working for years on this package of conditions that were all considered psychiatric conditions, and the seven of them, trying to get them added as a package of qualifying conditions. I came in, and others came in, with this veteran's idea. Number one, carry it alone. Just take post-traumatic stress and deal with it alone and make it a veteran's issue. And I say make it a veteran's issue because, you know, we are talking about it as vets. Vets are more likely, you know, statistically per capita, you know, to be injured, to be wounded, to have post-traumatic stress. But there's certainly much more post-traumatic stress sufferers out there that aren't vets than that are vets. And we recognize that. But we also recognize that as veterans, we can pull this away from the psychiatric, literally de-link it from the psychiatric connection. And make it a veterans issue and get it through the legislature, get it through the state houses, and get it passed as a qualifying condition. We never, ever intended ever to be saying anything other than, you know, we as veterans are suffering this, you're listening to us, let's do this, representing all patients. And at every step, I think, actually making it pretty quite clear that we're doing this as, you know, like the tip of the spear for all patients and you know, to make sure that all patients, and I think we've actively tried in many places to bring in the first responders and, you know, a lot of other kind of groups. It's been challenging, actually, and we're very, very happy to see the women's veterans coming forward, but we need more input, you know, we need more help on that.
So we don't have a lot of time left, and I've got one more question. So any further comments on Grandma Cat's question? Nope. Here we go.
First of all, I want to say thank you to all four of you for taking the time to do the interviews with me. You guys have amazing stories. And Patrick, I just wanted to ask, you developed a PTS pen. Where is that at right now, and what's that all about?
Well, thank you for bringing that up. We have created, in medical, we created a tool to help with PTSD. We did a two-year study in medical with a vape cartridge. And for 2 years, I collected data with veterans, combat veterans, rape victims. You had to have certifiably have PTSD. And we created what we believe, first of all, is going to be the first PTSD rescue vape cart on the market designed to help a veteran or a victim of PTSD with a trigger. It's going to be an amazing product, absolutely. I have teamed up with CPC, Jeremy Kaufman. If anybody knows Jeremy Kaufman and his team, that's an amazing group of guys, and they're helping me with the project. Also is Odo. Odo is helping with the project, but it'll be hitting the market sometime around the 1st. It'll be found at the 22 Too Many Veteran Support Depots that are spread out across the state. And it's going to change. It was created by victims of PTSD, for victims of PTSD, for sure. Thank you for asking the question.
Thanks, everyone. What we didn't get to, but I want to just raise real quick, is that question. Obviously, veterans are patients, but they're also part of the emerging cannabis economy in many ways, because their familiarity with their medicine, their knowledge about growing, whatever else, and also that jobs for veterans is a big deal. And I remember, I believe I was talking with Aaron a little bit earlier about how that's also part of the organizing that's going on there. So there's the political and the economic aspect to it. All right, folks, thank you so much for a wonderful panel. We are just honored for your service and for your being here today. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Next up, hemp.
Yeah, you get your shoes here.